Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Nikias, it's time to hoop it up. Dunker Nation, let's ride. Let's have some fun, man.
All right, we're going to do our best. We are sorry, YouTuber. Steve is no longer, it's the Toy Story meme. I don't want to play with you anymore. We get no YouTubers high. It's tough.
Man, man, you trying to cook me like I got cooked because I knew who AC Earl was.
Yeah, can we very briefly, we're going to get into the meat of the podcast. So Hoop Grids, if you haven't been online to see, it's basically like, you know, nine squares. You try to figure out which players have played for like these two teams, et cetera, et cetera. Lower score, the more obscure references, et cetera. This man, Steve, had a Hoops Grid score of like, what was it, like 9% or something insane with nine players?
Yeah.
AC Earl. Who is AC? Can you give me the quick scouting report on AC Earl? Then we can move on to the rest.
Look, I'm going to just tell you real quick how I got there, right?
Okay.
The idea... One, I have an advantage. I'm old and I know basketball. Like, I used to carry around the NBA register like it was like scripture. So that was what I would read all the time. And so all my guesses were just old Celtics. And if I went super deep, you'd be disgusted by where I started. I was not thinking about the Milwaukee Bucks at all. I was just like, hey, maybe this happened. I thought I hit one with Dominique Wilkins. For some reason, when it was like the 1,000 blocks career one, I thought he was the one for that. He wasn't. I was just thinking of old Celtics. I remember I had an AC Earl rookie card or something like that. And I was like, oh, yeah, he was up for the Celtics. And it went in. And I was like, oh, look at this. And I was just vibing. Like, I just did a little thread because I was bored. And I'm like, hey, this is kind of fun. Let's just see what happens. Man, all I see is quotation marks. You Googled AC Earl, not least obvious. I'm like, man, what, really? That's what I need to do just to look cool on the internet. AC Earl.
AC Earl. Like, I just. That is. These are the first references of AC Earl on a basketball podcast, I feel. Which, you know, shouts out for that. But no, you know, Steve doesn't have to Google. He's been around basketball basically his entire life. So, like, I get it. It was just funny that, like, we're all scrambling and trying to think of, ooh, who's this obscure two way contract in 2018 or something. And we boast our scores like, yeah, I got 22%. We under 30. Yeah, here comes Steve under 10. And I'm just like, oh, well, I had fun. It was cool doing this. It's like when I did Wordle and like I missed it once. I had a really long streak going. I missed it once, never did it again. I was like, nope, that was it. That's all I needed.
Dang, that wasn't the purpose. I was trying to get more people to do it. Some people had some really good ones. I was stuck. I'm just a sicko, man. It's fun.
I know you were just having fun. That's what makes it so funny, because the reaction is just, how the heck? That was my reaction. But anyway, that concludes Wordle / Hoop Grits with Nikias and Steve. So there you go. Anyway, on the NBA front, so not a heavy news cycle right now, especially on the NBA front, but we did get a memo over the weekend from the NBA, first reported by Shyam Charania of The Athletic, in which Adam Silver basically said, hey, man, you can't do that, / you can't be that loud, / you can't be that blatant. And if you or anyone else tries to do this, y'all gonna be in trouble, is the shorthand version of the memo. The actual memo says, recent media reports stated that Damian Lillard's agent, Aaron Goodwin, called multiple NBA teams to warn them against trading for Lillard because Lillard's only desired trade destination is Miami. Goodwin also made public comments indicating that Lillard would not fully perform the services called for under his player contract if traded to another team. We interviewed Goodwin and Lillard and also spoke with several NBA teams to whom Goodwin spoke. Goodwin denied stating or indicating to any team that Lillard would refuse to play for them. Goodwin and Lillard affirmed to us that Lillard would fully perform the services called for under his player contract in any trade scenario. The relevant teams provided descriptions of their communications with Goodwin that were mostly, though not entirely, consistent with Goodwin's statements to us. We have advised Goodwin and Lillard that any future comments made privately to teams or publicly suggesting Lillard will not fully perform the services called for under his player contract in the event of a trade will subject Lillard to discipline by the NBA. We also have advised the Players Association that any similar comments by players or their agents will be subject to discipline going forward.
That was the only thing I took away was the last part. Hey, just as a reminder,
you can't do that.
You can't do that. And more importantly, y'all can't do that. Just to remind all of y'all, I love the breakdowns, the think pieces. I kept this very simple. Mm-hmm. This looked like the email from HR on a Friday afternoon reminding you of the policy before the company party. Or the email from the daycare being like, hey, just as a reminder, don't drop them off at 10. It's just out there. So I didn't take much from it, except for the last part. Like, hey, just make sure we're not doing that. And in case you do, we've already talked to you about it. Mm-hmm. So now we can go per our last email in mm-hmm. case we find something. That's what I took away from it. So sorry for being boring in July, August. But, you know, I wasn't that moved. Where were you?
No, I got you. Like, it very much felt like a precedent-setting thing to where... Like you said, like, hey, you can't go about it like this. And I just found the entire conversation funny because it just kind of came off like, oh, here comes the league going after Dame, or here's the league going after Miami or something like that, or Portland told. I'm just like, no. Like, there's a whole like article from like Barry Jackson where Aaron Goodwin's on the record saying, hey, we told him, like, you know, Dame wants to be in Miami, period. It's like, well, that's not a conspiracy. Like, that's just a thing that was said. And so it's understandable why that's the play from Dame / Aaron Goodwin, because Dame has 4 years left on the contract and also does not have a no trade clause like Bradley Beal. So the only way that he can really create leverage is to persuade or dissuade other teams from trading for him, period. Which, one, again, I get it. Two, I don't even know how necessary that is, considering the possible packages from other teams / their point guard situations and all the good stuff. Because, like, when Damian Lillard says, I want to be traded, realistically, you're already wiping, like, 20 of the 29 teams off the board. Because they're either bad in stage two of their rebuild, they're already a playoff team, but Dame doesn't take them to a contender, and or they already have, like, a point guard that's in the top 10. And so that automatically removes most of the suitors to begin with. And so when you think about, you know, Dame requests a trade, he wants to be on a contender. Like, you go to Boston, it's like, okay, does Portland, if they're trying to rebuild, want to give Jaylen Brown a max? Maybe not. And if it's not that, then do they want Malcolm Brogdon and Robert Williams in first from Boston with one of the best two-way wing tandems in the league that is also smacked down in their prime? Probably not. Like, does Toronto make the jump? Like, I guess they could, but, like, do they want to do that? They're still trying to sort out stuff. So, like, I don't even know if it was necessary for them to be like, hey, don't trade for Dame. Because, like, I didn't anticipate, like, Detroit going after him. Like, when we did our Bleacher Report stream not too long ago, I threw out OKC as a team that could get in the room if they want to. And even on that stream, I said, I don't project that they're actually going to try this. But they just have the assets to do it if they want to. And so with enough of that, I don't even know if they had to be as loud or as public about that portion of it. But since they were, the league was well within their right to be like, no, we can't do that. Because if you do that, that means other teams, other players may try to do that. And it just becomes a whole mess. And when you have Dame off the back of Harden, off the back of KD, off the back of Harden, off the back of... At a certain point, the league was just going to draw a line. And I feel like this is... It's not even a hard line. It feels like a no, duh, you can't do that situation. But yeah, it made sense that once it became player with 4 years left plus no trade clause, has agent saying you don't trade for him or he's going to be unhappy, which we know what the insinuation is on that, which is also why I got a good chuckle out of the memo where the wording is like, hey, he didn't say they weren't going to play. Like, nah, we like, no, you may not have said that, but we know what that means. You know, so that's fine. So I guess the long way of answering your question, like, I didn't take much more from it either. Aside from, yeah, guys, this kind of had to be said from the league side. There has to be, like, a written / verbal line in the sand at some point. So that's just kind of where I went with it. Did you have any more thoughts on this situation? That concludes my Dame talk until another memo is sent or an actual trade is made. You know how I felt about this entire thing.
You know, funniest thing is you have given so many Dame takes after you said, I'm not talking about Dame anymore. Also very funny that we're breaking down a memo.
Welcome to July 31st of the NBA offseason. I mean, we can talk about transactions if you like. Udonis Haslam officially retired, gave the IG post and stuff. Congrats to him. The Bucks have signed Thanasis Antetokounmpo. Do you have thoughts? How you can fill a bench role?
Basketball has more than one royal family.
Okay, there you go. Dominic Barlow, Dylan Windler, Dwayne Washington, Jared Butler, just some of the names that have recently signed two-way contracts. Any of those pop for you?
Dylan Windler. I think there's still something there. Hopefully he can get healthy and stay right.
Really, really, really good shooter. I really feel like he would have had a role in Cleveland last season if he was healthy slash available. Was not. New York Knicks, obviously a team that could use some more shooting on the perimeter. So we will see if the two-way becomes more of a standard deal, if he's able to find a role there. Just a quick hat tip to Dominic Barlow, who obviously we were all in Wimby mania during Summer League. But Dominic Barlow has been hooping or was hooping during Summer League. Not a surprise that San Antonio brought him back. Nice to see Dwayne Washington's name back. He's also took a two-way deal with the Knicks. So we'll see if he's able to land a consistent home. That would be fun. And that concludes some two-way analysis from the Dunker Spot. We are fully in July as we get into August. Anyway.
Oh, no, man. Drop it in the comments. This has got to be the nastiest start to
We are here. We are here. But no, keep an eye on Dylan Windler. No, seriously. Anyway, on the W front, I'd say the biggest piece of news happened after we recorded naturally last week. But Nafisa Collier suffering an ankle injury towards the end of a Lynx win over the Washington Mystics, out 7 to 10 days. So I would imagine she makes her return sometime later this week or early next week. The Lynx have not lost since Nafisa Collier's went down, which has been interesting to track. The Lynx have just been good, period. After their 0-6 start, I think the record is 13-7 since then. Fully 500. They are firmly in the playoff picture now. Slightly ahead of the Washington Mystics in the standings, which is a whole nother conversation. But quick hat tip to the Minnesota Lynx and a good well soon to Nafisa Collier. Your Lynx thoughts?
Well, I mean, those are two pretty big wins. You go at New York, at Connecticut, you get wins. That's not just a, hey, we're on the way. It's like, no, we're a lot closer than you think. Mm-hmm. So it's been fun to watch them grow. Diamond Miller, I think, has been really good. Caleb McBride has been performing very well. I think this is a team that knows who they want to be. Everyone kind of fits their roles, and they're active. Like, they're not going to go away. It's not surprising that the Lynx are still where they're at. Now, the question is, I'm interested to see what happens this week. Yep, you walk in at 500. You are number 6. You're a game and a half out of 4. Those two teams you just beat, you now see them again. So that's where it's going to be like, okay, let's see what we got here. But if the Lynx are going to climb up and kind of go into that middle tier, so to speak, of, hey, that 4-5-6 tandem, are they just going to replace the Mystics in that tier? Or are they going to add to it? Be honest.
Well, I mean, in a literal sense, they have moved past the Mystics. As far as replacing them, though, I don't know. Because, like, so much of the conversation is muddy for me because Washington is so hurt right now. Like, you're missing EDD, you're missing Shakira, you're missing Ariel. Like, at a certain point, you just run out of bodies and you run out of starters at a certain point, which quick hat tilt to Brittany Sykes, who has been insane post All-Star break, like 19-5-4, shade under 3 steals per game in her 6 games post All-Star break. Natasha Cloud continuing to get downhill, not very happy with the whistle when she does get downhill and let everyone know about it after a recent game. But the guards are doing all they can. Tiana Hawkins trying to fill in and fill some gaps in the front court as well. It's just, they are just missing so many folks. This feels more like a Minnesota adds to that tier more than replacing Washington, because I think we both recognize Washington is really, really good and at the very least just elite defensively when they have their full cast of players. So I don't want to say replaces them. But Minnesota does some fun stuff. Like, I've always enjoyed watching them offensively, like, even when the personnel doesn't hit. Like, I think Cheryl Reed's offense is pretty flexible, pretty creative. Also, just got a good chuckle out of, like, after Nafisa goes down with the ankle injury, doesn't come back in, it's late in the fourth quarter. It's just, okay, well, we normally have Kayla McBride screen for Nafisa Collier, and they go inverted, and they kind of mess with defense there. Like, okay, let's just do that for Diamond Miller now. It's like, well, it's cool to have that kind of plug and play element. Also, just to have versatile forwards like Minnesota does. So their offense has been fun. Watching them just throw out buttloads of zone at teams particularly the start off game has also been pretty fun. I think this is a pretty good group. And you already mentioned Kaylin McBride, the way she stepped up. Dorka Juhasz, I think, is just firmly going to make an all-rookie team with her steady play on both ends of the floor. She's been fun. Quick hat tip to Lindsey Allen, who kind of falls under, like, the table setter tab. Like, she's gotten more aggressive offensively in addition to helping them get into their stuff. Has been pesky defensively. Want to give her a shout as well. I've just enjoyed watching this Lynx team as of late. It's good to see them. It's funny. They get healthy. They get Diamond back. She goes on a run. And now Nafisa's down for a week and a half. And it's like, well, it stinks. I would like to see just the fully healthy squad at some point. But it's been some good stuff in Minnesota. I think they add to the tier. And if they remain healthy, then this is firmly just going to be a good basketball team.
I think it confirms that the 4-5 matchup is going to be nasty. And not derogatory.
It's going to be a fun time in the playoff picture. For a team that likely will not have a fun time in the playoff picture, because they are currently out of the playoff picture right now. Can we talk about the Indiana Fever briefly? And I say briefly, but it's like a dunker spot briefly.
Yeah.
They have tumbled down the standings after a pretty cool start to the season. And it felt like, wait a minute, Indiana working their way up to that 7-8 range and then immediately long losing streak. Post All-Star break, I believe they are 1-5. Do you want to guess where Aaliyah Boston is in points per game for the Fever post All-Star break?
Third.
No, she is fourth. Would you like to guess where she is in shot attempts post All-Star break?
Third.
No, she is also fourth.
Oh.
And like that becomes like the heart of, I guess, the conversation for Indiana, because no one thought they were going to be title contenders this year. And like fringe playoff push was fun. It looks like they've fallen firmly out of that race as well. And so for me, it kind of becomes, how are you fostering an atmosphere or an environment of growth for your franchise being? And it doesn't feel like a great job is being done right now. And in light of like the bigger picture for Indiana and what type of team they are, when they were on their run, it was because their offense was elite. And they had that 2-week stretch where they were like the second best offense in the W and going back to June. And when that falls off, you look at the guard play and you also look at, okay, what is Aaliyah doing? And so I've kind of had issue, particularly late in games, with the usage with Aaliyah Boston. But I also feel like that conversation has kind of shifted to everyone is just failing Aaliyah versus room for growth for Aaliyah as well. Because I look at how she's defended, both in terms of the attention she gets when she gets the ball, but also how she's defended before she gets it. Teams seem to be more comfortable fronting her. And it doesn't feel like she is doing a great job of dealing with that right now. I don't think that's a long-term issue or anything of the sort. But just watching Fever games, there are pockets where she could get a touch, but she hasn't made herself super available. And that makes it tough for a cast of guards that aren't elite passers to begin with to find that. So I feel like there's a little bit of both happening right now. But I guess my general question would be, how have you felt watching the Fever as of late? And what's kind of standing out to you right now?
For me with the Fever, I still think they're fun. I do think they're just have kind of hit that same plateau. I don't want to say it's like Atlanta Dream from last year adjacent. But hey, there's film. We have more film of what you're trying to do. We're going to try and work to take things away. And I think it's the dynamic has shifted because I think we've had conversations about this. And it was, hey, why isn't Aaliyah Boston getting touches late? When I was listening to you, the first thought I went to was Nelissa Smith going down. How much did that change things for Aaliyah Boston and for Indiana? Because Aaliyah Boston is an all-star for a reason. So I don't necessarily love the, hey, she's just not being used properly. I just wonder if the context has changed. Because if you recall, Indiana was kind of like, hey, we can play you at the five. We can play you two together. We can go five out adjacent or four out adjacent. You know what I mean? Shifting that. And then Nelissa Smith goes down. So it's like, oh, this is just the thing. I think that combination plus Aaliyah Boston's success is very loud. Like her post touches that look great. It is a deep seal. It is a hit. It is a layup. You also have the patience back down, the footwork. I think there was a play where she got double, kicked it back out, resealed, finished. You have those, so it's hard to be like, hey, why are you not doing this more?
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, I remember teams are locking in on her now more and more. There was a possession, what? We watched the Sparks and Fever last week. De'Erica Hamby literally just face guarded her the entire possession. Like, literally, I don't care what you do. I'm looking at you with my hands up about to not let you get this pass. Mm-hmm. How do we handle that? What do we do with the pick and roll where, you know, hey, she's ceiling, has all this room, which is positive. The defense is locked in, but the skip pass is now open to a guard. How do we view those where Aaliyah Boston's gravity is now opening up a possession?
Right.
But you do have those loud moments where, you know, it feels like a parachute sometimes where, hey, Aaliyah Boston seals, Aaliyah Boston's open. Indiana does not pass Aaliyah Boston the ball. They go to the next thing. And so I do think there is like a dynamic with their offense of what they want to be and what they have. I think they're trying to toe that line because you can kind of see the guards look, but it's a quick look. And then it's, okay, we're supposed to be doing something else. Mm-hmm. And now she's working to move or still trying to fight. The ball's already swung and optically it just doesn't look great. You know, and so that's where maybe like a simple thing could be like, all right, if you don't have it here, catch it at the elbow. Now we flow into something. And now it looks different. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Now you're thinking, oh, she's more involved instead of pass, catch, hold. Oh, no, pass, drive, you know? And that's where my mind goes, where I'm like, I think it's a little strong in one direction or a little stronger than it should be. Mm-hmm. A, because I think it takes away from how talented she's been this year. And eventually, you know, I mean, she was all-star for a reason, but it's been a little bit of a tough stretch. A few tough games. How much of that is defenses? How much of that is offenses? How much of that is going from single coverage to double teams to denials and the context of who's open, trying to make a play for someone else? Mm-hmm. I just think it's a learning experience for everyone involved.
Yeah.
What say you?
Yeah, I was just going to say, to quickly bounce off of that, this has just been a lot of basketball for Aaliyah Boston, period. Like, these were just a whole lot of deep runs at South Carolina. You have this past season where, you know, South Carolina does win the title, but that season ends after a deep run, immediately to the draft, immediately to the W season. Then she makes the All-Star game. And I think they're playing again on that following Tuesday after All-Star weekend. And so that combined with her context changing with Nelissa Smith going down, I think that's a good point on your end. Because, you know, Nelissa's a very talented scorer, and she's a walking mismatch in her own right. And you remove that, and you add in Victoria Vivians, who can space it a little better, but doesn't provide the same, like, oomph as a downhill driver or a post-up threat, or doesn't give you extra cracks at it as an offensive rebounder in the way that Nelissa Smith will. Like, that makes it, you know, the margin for error for Indiana's offense goes down a little bit once you make that kind of shift. And then with defenses defending her, paying more attention to her, like, that's natural. She proved that she was an all-star in the first half of the season. Like, yeah, we're going to make sure she doesn't get these same touches. And so that combined with, you know, just general more attention being sent, more specific types of defenses being played with her. Again, I kind of eye the fronts and really trying to, one, deny. And then even if defenders get directly under her or try to play the high side and get under her, like, how quickly is she spinning off and resealing? Like, sometimes she does it, sometimes she doesn't. And, like, that's just going to be an area of growth for her. That, again, full transparency, I think she's going to get there. I think she's too good, too talented, too nimble, too smart not to. I think it's going to be a relatively quick shift for her. But, like, for right now, it does feel like a little bit of defenses are doing different things. The context is worse. The guards are not super great at getting her the ball generally. And it all just kind of becomes tough, I guess, on the guard front, because we've talked about them. We've mentioned them. I don't think Indiana's guards are bad. Like, Kelsey Mitchell was also an all-star. And I think Erica Wheeler, what she does as a downhill force, and what she does as a driver with or without a screen, I think is pretty valuable to opening up advantages in the half court in a way, especially in light of Nelissa Smith not being there anymore. You need someone that can make a defense rotate. And I think she does that. I'm finding it difficult to kind of parse through, like, I guess which guard set or which guard is best for maximizing what Aaliyah could do versus who can help the Fever get into their offense, if that makes sense. Because I think you see, like, when Aaliyah Boston and Grace Berger are playing together, it feels a lot more fluid in terms of getting Aaliyah touches and getting her the ball in favorable areas. But also, you think about how defenses guard Grace. Like, it's an under quite a bit. Now, she is adept at using rescreens and getting to her pull-up, and she's getting more comfortable with that. So, not that that's going to be a long-term issue either. But just thinking about how the Fever as a whole are guarded, Grace is getting unders. Erica Wilder's getting unders too, but she's also faster and gets downhill more than Grace does. And Kelsey Mitchell isn't a natural point guard, but she's also, I feel like, the lone guard on the roster that can draw two to the ball and open up things in that way. So I guess, how do you feel about that dynamic and how do you kind of parse through that?
I think it's just, part of it is just the freedom. And that's where I kind of mentioned, what is Indiana looking to do? Because how much better would it look if the guard play was just a little bit stronger in one area? If the shooting was a little bit better, or the driving was a little bit better? And that's the interesting part of the conversation. Because I don't want to like just directly move someone who sees Aaliyah Boston posting up against Jewel Lloyd and there's no touch, but there's a drive. And it's like, okay, optically, I don't know how that makes sense. But at the same time, you mentioned Grace Berger. I always said when Grace Berger first started coming in, you know exactly what time it is. Do we need a post-entry pass? I will deliver said post-entry pass. Done. But we're looking at Grace Berger, and now she's becoming more aggressive because, I mean, what's the point of the space if you're going to go, what, 4 or 5 out, have that space? Are guards not going to drive and attack gaps? Are they going to be threats? Like, that's where I'm just like, I don't know what the archetype for a Fever guard would be. And that's where it's like, I feel like they're caught between two worlds and trying to play with pace, but also fit Aaliyah Boston into that. Because you think about the possessions, Aaliyah Boston gets a rebound, kick to Kelsey Mitchell, pull up. Aaliyah Boston's not crossed half court. Or a quick pick and roll. Aaliyah Boston's rolling, right? Mm-hmm. And now it's, oh no, I'm going to advance it because that's what we're supposed to do. Make quick decisions. Okay, now Aaliyah Boston has finished her roll. Oh, Victoria Vivian's drove. Because there's a gap.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's like, okay, we need the guard play to elevate to a certain level. But for the guard play to elevate to a certain level, they kind of got to do stuff. And if they can just find that balance to where, okay, now I know this is my time to drive and kick and be a threat, I think the combination looks a lot better. We've seen it flow. We've seen the movement. We've seen it work. For some reason, it's just a little bit off. I don't know if it's exactly one thing we can point to either.
And I think what kind of throws me off, like, I think back to, again, earlier in the season, and maybe this is just a general teams have updated their scouting reports point, and that could just be all it is. But, like, I think about some of the opening scripts that Indiana would run to kick off games where it feels like every, first possession of each Fever game is we're going empty side with Kelsey Mitchell and Aaliyah Boston in some kind of way. And they're able to play out of that, whether it's a quick touch to Aaliyah on a post-up, they go pick and roll, Kelsey's able to get something, or they play out of it and it's fine. And it's hard for me to kind of balance that and knowing that they can tap into that with some of the fourth quarter stretches that they have. Where it's just like, okay, what exactly are you, like, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But, like, what are you even trying to do process-wise? And I think that's what has me confused. And if it has me confused, I know it has, like, Fever fans confused as they're watching some of these late games. Because you look at Indiana's record, like, they're at the bottom of the standings, but a lot of that is because they are in a whole bunch of, like, 3, 4, 5-point games, and they just cannot seal the deal because their offense just falls off a cliff. And, again, the defense hasn't been very good all year long. It's been much better with Aaliyah on the floor because Aaliyah's been good individually. There's only so much she can cover for. And there's only so much that she, the rookie as well, can cover for. And so I'm just, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to evaluate what I'm seeing on that front and trying to project, like, okay, what makes sense? Like, to your other question, like, what is the guard archetype that will maybe flow best with Aaliyah and then the Fever at large? But then it's also like, the Fever are pretty early into their rebuild. Like, we are still in year one of Aaliyah. Like, they don't have to have the answers right now. It would be more surprising if they did have the answers right now. But it did kind of open up this thought bubble for me, just looking at the guards that they have, the player, you know, the archetypes that they are, and trying to parse through that. And then in light of, I think it's Terrell Brandon from Anscape, in a whole lot of different places. He does a bunch of stuff in the W space. But his tweet saying he heard, you know, rumblings of a player in Indiana asking out and a potential, like, Kelsey Mitchell, Skylar Diggins-Smith based trade. that feels like two separate things. That's how I read it. But anyway, once I saw that during All-Star weekend, and now in light of how the post All-Star stretch for Indiana has opened up for them, and the trade deadline, I think, is August 7th or August 8th. We're about a week away from it. How would you feel about Skyler in Indiana? I think, like, the off the court and the, like, she played in North Bend, et cetera, like, all of that, or South Bend, rather. Like, that makes sense. And obviously, Skyler's really good. Do you feel like she's the type of guard that would make sense for Indy?
I think she would make a lot of sense because of the threat that she is, because of the things that she can do as far as scoring and passing. Mm-hmm. I think it helps the hierarchy a little bit and to a degree. But for me, I would like it more in free agency than just outright. Mm-hmm. Because I like, that's a move where I would rather know exactly what the Fever are. And then, hey, Skyler takes us from here to here. Right. As opposed to, Skyler's very good. We want a very good player. Okay, now what do we do? But that part I wouldn't like. So that's where it's like, I don't know if you really want to make a trade right now. You know? But I would totally get that move. I think the guard room, they're going to look to upgrade it at some point somehow. I just don't know if that's the move at the deadline. It's tricky. Like, I'm so stuck on these possessions. Now they play in my head like a loop of guards trying to do things. Like, yeah. Lexi Hall feeling like I need to drive and kick, and defense stays home. No one's helping. Okay. I kick to someone else. They drive. Defense stays home. No one's helping. And how much different it looks if you have the guards who are knocking down those shots, who are able to force help. That helps their flow. So you can see what they're trying to do there. Mm-hmm. I think that's just probably the Fever's problem right now, which is okay. I mean, they're a young team. This is what you're supposed to do at this stage. What works for us to get to the next level? Like, who's their shooter? Outside of Kelsey Mitchell.
I was about to say, that's also not an issue, but like in, you know, the context of this conversation, like when your best spacer is also your best ball handler, but also not your best passer. It's just like, okay, how do we blend all of these things together? Because Kelsey's at her best when she's off the ball, flying off these staggers and then making plays against tilted defenses. Okay, how do you involve Aaliyah in that? Do you make her the second screener and it turns into like a pseudo pick and roll? She gets downhill. Like, how do you balance that in the post touches? And if Kelsey, you know, is Kelsey making the entry pass? You keep her one pass away. Are you spacing her on the weak side? So if the double comes, you can swing it from there. Do you have the guards that will make that connect the play if the double comes? Can you make the entry pass if it's not Kelsey? It's just a really weird loop. And I'm curious to see like how Indiana solves that. And again, like, this is year one of Aaliyah. Like, heads don't have to roll right now, I don't think. So I just wanted to get your Fever thoughts, because it's been a minute since we've like fully indexed on them, and things have gone an opposite direction since the last time we fully indexed on them.
Yeah. And I didn't even make a pun. I made no jokes. I delivered analysis. Tried my best. I just, you know, I think there's questions with the Fever, but Aaliyah Boston does still lead the W in field goal percentage at what, slightly under 60%? I think they'll get there.
She's quite good. It's just, you know, on that front, like, it'd be cool if she can get like 12, 13, 14 shots versus like 7, but you know.
I think we assume that all those shots would just transfer to Aaliyah Boston, forgetting that guards like to shoot.
Yeah, that's pretty true. That's pretty true. While we're on the W front, can we talk a little bit of awards on the last pod? Where are you at on Coach of the Year right now?
Look, pal, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I love Coach of the Year. I love finding like the underappreciated job that's been done. I don't know how you don't give this to Becky Hammon at this moment. Mm-hmm. I don't see the argument against Becky Hammon at this moment. This team is insane, and it's not just because of their talent. Like, they're getting better and putting pressure on teams and defending and different lineups. No, for me, it's Becky Hammon.
It's just Becky for you.
Stephanie White should definitely be in consideration. I'm of that opinion. To get this son at that level, despite having no Jonquel, I think it's very impressive. So that would probably be my strongest. If I had to go into the ring and debate, I'd probably go Stephanie White. LT in Dallas. It's hard to ignore that. But then, like, after that, where do you go? Are we throwing the ones up for Cheryl Reeve? Is it right turnaround time? Like, where are we going?
That's a good question. Like, Cheryl Reeve is interesting because you have to kind of, at least partially, kind of parse through Cheryl the coach versus Cheryl put this team together and then try to figure out, like, okay, cool. So they 13-7 after the 0-6. What part of the 0-6 is who are our guards? And, like, Ariel Powers has played, like, 8 minutes. And, you know, so, like, that's part of the world is, like, okay, how do we, is that, like, 90-10 to the, like, what, you know?
Can I be respectfully messing for 1 second?
Sure.
Why do they start the season like this?
All the because last year it's like, hey, what they doing? Did they release like 8 people? It wasn't 8 people, but like it was like a whole bunch of wavings and stuff. I'm like, huh, that's odd. And then July hits, and like they're the second best offense in the W, like 6th in defense, and they blew the Aces out. And it's like, so they good and they can play. That's deep.
Secondary, respectfully messy question: is Cheryl Reeve just in the My Bad Hall of Fame? Like, obviously, true Hall of Famer, but does she also enter that one?
She might.
Hey, my fault, y'all. Don't worry.
Hey, just trust me. Don't worry. I hear you. I'll talk to my boss, you know? And you know, she is the... So I don't know, man. It just trips me out. But Cheryl's a good shout. Like, Stephanie, like, taking over for this Connecticut team and, like, the subtle shifts with their offense, the defense remaining good. You lose Bree Jones, AT at the 5. They're still like very good. I can hear it. I think I'm with you though. Like when the Aces are, as of the literal recording right now, first in offensive rating, first in defensive rating, first in 2-point percentage, 3-point percentage, effective field goal percentage, true shooting percentage, the lowest turnover rate in the league. Like at a certain point, it's just like overwhelming to a degree of how good they've been. And like obviously the talent is the talent, but you spoke to it. Like there's a level of versatility with this group, with their lineups, with their schemes on both ends of the floor, where it's like Becky's also just pushing the buttons that are necessary for this team to not just be the best in the league, but statistically the best team in W history. Like that is a, like once you hit that bar, you just kind of have to take a step back, like wait.
Once you start hitting the Houston Comet type, hey, we haven't seen this since then. I'm like, all right. Let's look at this completely differently. Because I was a kid, but I remember, hey, that team is very, very good. We could probably do a The Aces Are Dumb segment every week. And we'd probably at least last until, what, you think a month?
Probably.
Just a stat. Like, just the casual, hey, these three have scored 20 plus more than everyone in W history. Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's just one of those, you know. I was looking at, like, just the traditional box score stuff or player stats for the Aces this year. It was like, okay, so Chelsea Gray is still doing 50-40-90. Kelsey Plum would be there, but she's only shooting 37.5% from three. Jackie would be there, but she's, like, only shooting, like, 82% from the free throw line. I was like, oh. Well, that seems pretty easy for defenses to deal with. That's neat. That is very cool to have that level of efficiency. Also, just watching the game last night and Chelsea Grace is she's making up passes every game, it feels like. Like the driving, diving, almost out of bounds, over the head, look to Alicia Clark, and it's like, okay, man. What is anybody supposed to do with this? A highly anticipated Aces Wings game after the Wings won the last one. And like in the first quarter, the Aces are just up 15, 16. I'm like, all right, well, they had this one circled. That's cool.
that's the scary part, right? That's the scary part with the Aces. There's a lot of scary parts. I know we're not going to go full on Aces. I'm going to pull it back. We've seen what the Aces do when they are geared up. You think about that Wings game. You think about that Liberty game. When they want to deliver a message, it's time. And like Chelsea Gray's season, I've had a hard time to explain it. But to me, it feels like, let me get all these passes off. I can also get buckets. Oh, the game is close. Okay, let's go home. Casually, just,
yeah.
Go look up her numbers and look at how she's doing it. And it's just casually bringing it up. Like, nah, do this real quick. Blah, blah, blah. But the amount of defense that Satu Sabally and the Dallas Wings played on that possession where Chelsea Gray looked to explore and eventually found that pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
It was just a, you know, cross, step back, cross, step back, reject the screen, cross, drive, contact, pass. Like, okay. Sure.
I don't like the bit of the Aces being so good that I now have to talk about them as well. Reverential fashion, this is not good for the pod, so I'm going to circle back. What does Sandy Brondello have to do to get some Coach of the Year love from Nikias, huh?
Play every game like it's July 27th, apparently. But no, beyond that, I don't know, because, like, the offense is really starting to hum now. I mean, the offense has been good all year, statistically anyway. Like, we've talked about some of the more nuances about how to get into their flow and stuff and possession to possession consistency. But, like, the offense has been really good. Defense has been solid. The Jonquel usage post All-Star break, and really before that, but, like, especially post All-Star break, like, that feels a lot better, and that's opening up some stuff. I guess for Coach of the Year, like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to undersell all of the lineup buttons that have had to be pushed with the Liberty this year, especially in light of Jonquel coming back from the surgery or just coming back from recovery in general. I don't know. It just, like, is she doing a better job than Stephanie White to you?
That's the tricky part.
Yeah, that's why
I don't know where the answer is, because I don't think she's getting enough credit for how much she's had to do for the Liberty. And how much, hey, let's base the offense in our movement. Let's establish this. As we're growing, we're going to do this no matter what. And it may be rough at times, but we're going to get the kind of shots we want. And then we use our talent. You know, and we've seen them kind of build and add and use pressure points naturally. Defensively, they figured it out. The lineups, having two bigs, being able to go small, missing people. I think there's a lot of things she's done. But at the same time, is that not also the Stephanie White lane?
Yeah.
But that's the problem when it comes to Coach of the Year. If I'm bigging both y'all up for similar things, now I got to choose one.
It's like, all right, who's been better? What's going on?
Because Stephanie White has went to Connecticut. Hey, we may not have this, but let's up the pace. Let's up the tempo. Let's move the ball. I know it's your favorite subject, but there are moments and pockets where it feels a lot cleaner. So it's like, oh, y'all both hooping it up. And then I end up back at Dallas. Like, hey, man.
Yeah. You know, their stars are playing like 87% of the games and still doing the thing.
I think of the Coach of the Year candidacy. That's got to be like when you walk past somewhere and it's like, ooh, what's that? What's that smell? Smell good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not going to eat there, but I'll circle back. I mean, I'm going to the store, but, you know, something like that.
We have reached the Steve did not have lunch before the pod portion of the program. Every time. It hits every time. It's amazing. One last W question I had for you before we get into at least a couple of questions in the mailbag. We may not do the full assortment of questions since our conversations have been dunker spot conversations. So naturally, we like 40 minutes in or whatever. How do you sort through the best player in the league conversation? Like, slightly independent from MVP. Like, it can be both, obviously. But, like, I did my typical Nikias thing where I just thought myself into a loop. And now I'm just kind of wondering if I was thinking too much. But I was thinking about, like, how I evaluate players in the W versus the NBA. Because, like, obviously, basketball is basketball at the end of the day. Shooting, dribble, whatever. But, like, in terms of what each league values or what's more valuable in each league, I wonder if I've kind of sold Asia short, which is funny coming from me with the amount of Asia praise that I've put on the pod. But, like, I've pretty consistently over the last 2-3 years, like, people ask me, like, who do you think is the best player in the league? Like, I think it's Breonna Stewart. And I think what has always given Breonna Stewart the edge for me is just how she affects all three levels on both ends of the floor. And I think about her ability, like defensively, her ability as a helper on the perimeter versus like the rim protection, though she brings that too. But like what she does there, her ability to switch, her ability to defend perimeter players in a way that Asia can. And then offensively, her usage as a ball handler, her usage as a legitimate spacer off movement as well. And so like technically they're both playing the four this year, but like Stewie does more of those perimeter based things. And in fact, it impacts the game in a way that Asia doesn't in that regard. And I feel like that's a very clear, like that carries over from the NBA side. Because like a lot of my favorite players are the guys that I feel are the best in the league are like those big wings or jumbo playmakers that can affect things and you can invert your offense for them and they can just affect multiple areas. And like, I don't think it's fair to call Asia like a traditional big with her ability to face up, the passing has improved, she can handle and stuff too. But like she fits more in that mold than like the Stewie I can play like 2 through 5 and affect games in that way. And so I was kind of trying to check like, I guess my bias in that regard, if that makes sense. Like not a negative, but this what I value. And now trying to compare what I value to what the league as a whole values and how important on the W level, like the paint is just the most important area. And that's not super dissimilar to the NBA, but we've had the big perimeter explosion and three-point explosion in the NBA. And the W is getting there, but isn't there yet. And so what you do from 10 feet in and how much you can affect from 10 feet in seems to reign supreme in the league still. And in that regard, like Asia has been at worst a top three rim protector in the league this year. Stewie can do that, but she isn't that. And she isn't an anchor in that regard. We know what Asia does as a rebounder. We know what Asia does as a finisher at the basket, offensive rebound, drawing fouls, getting downhill in that regard. And it's like, should I be valuing that portion a little bit higher? And is there more of a case for Asia as like the best player in the W? Does that make sense? Or am I just like in?
No, it makes sense. I think the best player in the W, the best player in the league, I think it's very, very tough. And that's a good thing. I just think it's subjective. For me, I just think it's, one, I'm trying to avoid Stewie and Asia becoming my Jokic and Embiid conversation. Mm-hmm. But I also just think the versatility of Asia and Stewie is so important, and that's kind of what separates them to me from people in the league, the fact that they can do all of those things if asked or if needed, and they do it night after night. You know, you mentioned the scoring, but the defense. There's defensive clips of Asia just doing insane things. Stewie does the same stuff. So for me, I kind of just stack it on like, oh, you're doing that. Oh, you're doing that as well. Oh, you're doing that as well. Oh, your team needs you to do this. Without that, your team looks completely different. Once you start to stack that up, that's when I start to elevate that. So like, even if you wanted to make like a, I may say that Jackie Young is maybe higher on my MVP list than Arike, right?
Mm-hmm.
I might put Arike higher in the best player in the league because of the responsibility she has mm-hmm. for Dallas, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I kind of try and tie it to what your team needs you to do rather than just pure performance. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it makes it tough because, I mean, if you value scoring, you're going to look at something different. Like, where do you put a Chelsea Gray in this conversation? To where she's doing this at, you know, what efficiency? If she did that more, would she, you know what I mean? That's where I get tripped up, where it's like, okay, mm-hmm. who else can I put in this conversation?
Yeah, the roles are very important. And I think, you know, again, zooming out, like, I think in whatever order you put them in, I don't want to gatekeep basketball or anything like that, but it feels pretty firm that Stewie and Asia are the two best players in the league in whichever order you put them in. Like, that feels pretty firm to me. So I'm just trying to, like, parse out the degrees. Because I'm with you, like, on stuff that I feel like Stewie does better than Asia, I feel like Stewie is required to do those things. Whereas, like, Asia can, but, like, it doesn't really matter if she doesn't. And, like, that, I guess you can more so, it'd be easier to see that with, like, the three-point shooting. Where we just saw Asia last year, moderate volume, but shot well for three. This year, hasn't made a bunch, also just has barely taken threes this year. And so it's like, all right, cool, Stewie's a better shooter, more volume, better efficiency, et cetera, et cetera. How much does that matter in light of what they're asked to do? Like, is it fair to, like, is it just Stewie praise, or do you actually ding Asia for that, if that makes sense? It's like, those are the kind of questions that I'm asking myself as I try to figure out, okay, where do I really have these two? I've been Stewie, then Asia for a little bit, and this is with you know, Asia winning MVP and DPOY and a title last year. And based on what she's doing right now, I'm not batting an eye if she wins MVP and Defensive Player of the Year again this year with what she's been able to put together. Like, we just talked on the last pod, you know what my picks are right now. But wouldn't surprise me at all, because Asia's been that. And so, like, especially in light of that, it's just like, okay, wait. How much of this is, again, just my preference? Because I just gravitate towards the forwards, the wings, the bigs that can do guard-like things and just affect literally everything. Versus Asia is the most dominant inside 15-foot player in the WMOV. Point blank, period. That is also the most valuable area of the court in the W league-wide. MVP, DPOY on top of that. This is it. End of discussion. So, like, I don't know. Like, I've just had a lot of fun, like, trying to think through that. And I wanted to see where you were. I don't think we've had, like, this discussion. I feel like all of our top player discussions have been within the lens of MVP and all W versus just the player ranking stuff. Which I don't feel like we've, outside of free throws, I guess, we don't really get into the rankings that often.
Sure don't. Sure don't. Let me tell you, when that email comes, I'm going to think long and hard before I hit reply.
Ah, I see. Hey, guys, think you could do a top 25 players in the... Which we should probably do, like, a top 20 in the W.
What would our top 20 list... What would the most dunker spot way we could do this be? Like, what would that look like?
like a weighted grading scale based on, like, scheme versatility and...
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Never mind. That's
it. Hey, we could get in the weeds with it. I feel like you know that much. Before we get to the mailbag, any stray W thoughts? Teams, players catching your eyes, anything of the sort?
One, just would love for the schedule to at some point become more balanced. So hopefully we can knock that out next season. So, you know, you have the excitement of three games and Saturday ready to go. No, all the games Sunday.
Yeah,
it's starting to become, ooh, I want breakfast. Oh, it closes in 5 minutes.
Oh, God.
And then my last W thought is it looks like it's just the sky for the 8 seed, unless the Sparks can turn up here real quick. I don't know.
Actually, on that note, and I have a free throw related to this, but, like, Kalia Coffer's season just flying under the radar because the Sky just have not been healthy this year. Like, I knew she's been playing well. She was a worthy all-star. Kalia Coffer just flirting with 41% from three this year? Like, that feels like a pretty big deal.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Does that help you understand why they may have done whatever it could to try and keep her?
How can I respectfully answer this?
You can't.
Because here's my thing, right? We're not going to do the rehash for, like, the 87th time. Y'all know how I feel. At no point was I, like, surprised that they... Like, I'm not surprised that they went in the direction to, let's get a win now, move in here. Let's try to build this around Kalia Coffer. That was always an understandable position to me. The specific way that they went about that and what was given up to do that is where my issue lies. And so, like, Cobb being good, like, I guess in a literal sense, it reinforces why they want to build a winner around her, because she's that good. However, I stand firm in my belief that they did a not great job of accomplishing that goal, which is reflected in the standings, naturally. But also, the current return on investment for said centerpiece of said deal is at no point should I have a free throw related to her and Diana Taurasi at this stage of Taurasi's career, when you just gave up all of that to do that. Also, speaking of... You know, I had it as a free throw. I'll save it now. Why did Diana do that? Can we talk about it? Because, like, how does that... Like, I know how it literally happens. Like, it felt like a late reaction reach for the ball type situation. But, like, dog. How? And it also the clip where you could just see the ref staring at the play. It's like, y'all just ain't gonna say, like, we can recognize it was accidental, but also you quite literally cannot do that. That seems to be like a very easy whistle. And I'm not sure how that just didn't happen.
Hey, I got the most underrated thing is Marina Mabry didn't really react.
Yeah, until after. It's just like, well.
That, well, yeah, I mean, in the moment, are you looking around the court that much?
It's like, play on. It's like, okay, well. I just don't. Oh, Lord. Anyway, Marina, 14 and a half points, 4 boards, 4 assists, 41% on twos, 38% on threes, 83% from the line. Like, it's fine, but it's not, you know. But that concludes. I think that's all I had on that. Oh, also, I guess Sky Sparks adjacent. Just a shout out to Jordan Canada, who I would have had like as an all-star reserve this year. She has been lighting the Nets on fire. Post all-star break, the defense has remained good. Most improved race is looking like it's going to be a really tough one, and she has firmly put her name in that discussion. We will see where it lands as the season progresses, but Jordan Canada is hooping it up in dunker spot parlance. Anyway, to the mailbag, we'll get to a couple before we close things out. Thank you to those who have sent in questions. Again, you don't need a prompting for us. If you have basketball thoughts on the NBA or W side, or just general basketball thoughts, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. We will get to them. This one going to come from Bennett. Shout out to the group chat. Bennett says, years ago, I read about how the Dirk-led Mavericks were often underrated on defense. That is, their end-of-year defensive rating often outperformed what was expected based on their middling defensive personnel. One explanation for this trend was that, in addition to Dallas's offense being elite and thus preventing transition buckets, even on possessions where the Mavericks missed a shot, Dirk was often positioned away from the basket. By having their big operate on the perimeter so often, Dallas prevented easy transition buckets even on possessions they missed a shot or turned it over, at least compared to league average. About 2 months into the most recent regular season in the NBA, I remembered this point and wondered if the Nuggets defense might be underrated for similar reasons. Their defense did end up being underrated, but I'm not sure how much this trend played a factor in that. Do you think there's some validity to this premise and the connection between the two teams? If so, is it a trend that we should look for in other teams, and or is it something that other teams should look into?
I thought Bennett wasn't in it.
Yep. You know what? You got it.
Good question. For me, I don't know if it gets to a trend, but it may be something that you keep an eye on, or, you know, something that you use to help base your transition defense. Hey, if you're up here, just make sure you get back. My teams just kind of have their base set. Hey, let's get back. Make sure the big is able to get back, set the tone, everyone match up, all that good stuff. My thing is, it's just tough because everyone has so many different talents and different type of players. So, like, I don't know how many, if Embiid's not spaced, or can you count on that every time? You know, if there's a drive or a screen and you rolled and the shot went up, can you count on that every time? Like, I just don't know if you can bake that in every single time to where, hey, this is what we do all the time. I do think it's a plus if you note it and say, hey, if you're up here and let's make sure we take those away. But at the end of the day, the whole goal is, hey, take away the easy stuff. I never go that deep into transition stuff. And it's not because it's not interesting. It's just because it was beaten out of me. I was like, why are there transition clips on this edit?
That's your league experience. Like, no.
But
story time with Steve?
But just don't. Hey, first Eclipse transition. What is this?
I thought it was important. I don't know. I just figured.
Hey, I was hitting play on that one. Oops.
Well, that's kind of tough. I thought this was a fascinating question because I think just with how the NBA is evolving, you're always trying to find, like, okay, how are teams trying to win on the margins these days, or how are certain teams trying to find those edges? So I like went through the Denver transition stuff you didn't have to. You're welcome, Steve. Did you know that the Denver Nuggets ranked first in transition frequency allowed off of live rebounds last year?
That's not good, right?
No, it's very good.
Oh,
lowest percentage of transition opportunities off of live rebounds. So not going to go full blown like correlation, causation, et cetera, but it is interesting that he thought of Denver, and Denver actually had the best mark or lowest mark allowed in that regard.
That's a big W for Bennett. Do you know who was number two?
I can pull that up very quickly. I still have the cleaning the glass tab up because I always have like 87 tabs up. So if I can find the we are doing some podcasting, buddy. Yes, sir. I forgot I was also looking at Dirk numbers comparatively. So I saw that Denver was first, and I also went to Jokic's on-off stuff. And like in 6 of his 8 years in the league, Denver's transition frequency allowed has been lower with Jokic on the floor. And so that kind of tracks with him operating above the break, things of that nature. Second, Steve, the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, okay. All right.
They got back.
Okay.
You're going to love this. Boston is third. Do you want to know who's fourth?
Who?
The Charlotte Hornets.
Okay. All right. I see what's happening here.
We have the full-blown, like, Steve gauntlet. Okay. So the top 6, actually the top 7, Denver, OKC, Boston, Charlotte, Dallas is 5, Minnesota 6, Brooklyn 7. How are we feeling?
That is certainly a list. It is interesting, though.
I am so glad we got here. Thank you, Ben.
It's a great question, Ben. I have a follow-up question for the both of you.
Okay.
What if you just score a lot?
Yeah. That limits the... And this is why we look at the percentage of why you look at the frequency in that case.
I was trying to be inspired by KD. My bad.
Nah, I understand. But no, I'm glad you did bring that up though, because like on the Denver front, again, lowest allowed frequency off of live makes. I mean, off of live misses, but they were 28th in points per possession allowed, and so I think that brings you to the larger conversation of okay, so Jokic is back. If they do attack him, what kind of deterrent is he going to be at the rim? And like, we've had enough Jokic defense conversations. Like, you know, that portion of it isn't great for him. So that still tracks. But in terms of having him back first and what they can do, what that portion of it can serve as a deterrent, like that would at least track a little bit. Or at the very least, them being first makes it worth doing a deeper dive into their transition clips and seeing exactly what's happening there. So again, I like that question. We had some fun stuff. I did not expect to look at transition frequency rankings on the pod, but we are deep in July. We're going to have some fun. A W question from Jake. What have your thoughts been on the impact of Tierra McCowan during the Dallas Wings' recent win streak? What could she do to contribute to a series postseason push? We'll note that this question was sent in while the Wings were in the midst of their 5-game winning streak. The Connecticut Sun snapped it, I think, last Tuesday. But if you do zoom out over the last 8 games, De'Aaron McCowan is averaging 16 points, a shade under 10 rebounds, block and a half, shooting extremely well from the field as well, averaging over 4 offensive boards. So De'Aaron McCowan has been hooping it up. I guess just to quickly answer that, I'll turn it over to you, Steve. I think the impact, you know, circle back to the Asia Stewie conversation. She's just owning the paint in a way that even with Dallas not shooting well, which zooming out, the Wings just not being able to knock down shots from the perimeter is just going to be their downfall, I feel like. But one way to counter the misses is to rebound an unhealthy amount of them. And that is what the Wings do, and that is specifically what Tierra McCowan does. She just generates so much pressure on the rim, and she generates a lot of extra possessions. And like that portion of it feels replicable to me. I think if they are able to post her up, she gets those deep seals. Like the high-low chemistry is something that Steve has touched on in a recent episode. With Natasha Howard getting her those looks and Satu getting her those looks, she can just get easy shots at the rim and or free throw attempts. And that can slow things down for Dallas, who post All-Star break, their pace has been a lot lower than it was pre All-Star break, which is something that I'm keeping an eye on now to see if there is like an intentional shift to playing slower or what. But that feels like the easy thing. On like the negative end of the spectrum, like I just continue to keep my eyes on the defense for Tierra. Because defending in space has been something, it's just been an adventure for her in her W career, period. And like last year, we talked about on the pod where Dallas started experimenting with her. Like she's at the level, but she's more so just guarding the screener versus anything the ball handler's doing. It's like, let me just get up here and make sure you can't roll. And that puts some strain on the back end. It's like a really unconventional way of putting two on the ball. But like, yeah, she just doesn't like move super well in space. And so I do kind of worry, depending on what the matchup is, like, Aces Wings has been a fun regular season battle. I do kind of worry if this is just a playoff series and we know we are playing them, what kind of actions they can put Tierra in. And the primary backup center is Kalani Brown, who also isn't great in space. And so, like, that portion of it is where it gets kind of fuzzy for me. But Tierra is just a force on the interior as a post-up threat, just as a scorer and an offensive rebound creator. So that's kind of where I land. What say you, good sir?
I think the defense is a good talking point. I do find that there is a comfort at times with the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. Even going to the Aces game where, hey, I'm not going all the way out there, but I also know that you're trying to drive. So I'm just going to stay right here. I do now worry about if they spam the button, what does it look like? But I think she's just a really important part of what Dallas does. The size, the work inside. I think her screening goes under the radar. Mm-hmm. Just with the way that she can screen on ball, off ball, get a hit, make contact, the rolls, high lows. We've talked about it. The post-ups are important. I just think she's a big piece of the glue for Dallas.
Mm-hmm.
And so her being able to have that impact, rebound the ball, I think that's a plus. So I think she's had a really good year. I think they need her to stay consistent, and the defense needs to hold up for them to hit their ceiling.
Got you. Let me get to this quick one, then we'll close this out with some free throws. This one's going to come from Steven. Love the show. Thanks for all of your hard work in making these pods. Who do you think is more successful on the defensive end this season? Evan Mobley or Victor Wembanyama?
I'm going to have to go Evan Mobley.
Going to go Mobley. Like, I also went Mobley, and then I started thinking. I was like, you know, how do I project the Wemby defensive experience to go this year? Because I think he's going to be very good from day one. And it's not like we don't have precedence with a rookie flirting with an all-defensive team. Because that was literally our conversation with Evan Mobley. So this is why I like that this question was asked. And I was like, you know what? What is this going to look like? I think Evan also had the benefit of, you know, playing alongside of Jared Allen. That could, one, help him on the back line if he's playing higher up or defending fours or whatever. But at the very least, like, he didn't have to play 100% of his minutes at the five early. So even in the center-only minutes that were fine but not great, there weren't a ton of those compared to your average rookie center who is just playing center. With Wemby, though, well, he's certainly not going to be playing alongside of Jared Allen. But also, I wonder if that's just going to make his defense pop even more when you look at who he's going to have to cover for defensively. But I also worry that he's going to have to cover for a lot more than Evan Mobley had to. And does that, do we see like a foul heavy Wemby for the first 15 games of the season or something? Like those are the kind of things. So like I'm going to say Mobley, especially since now we're entering year three of Mobley and he's once again proved that he was a defensive player of the year caliber defender last year. So like, it's hard for me to say Wemby DPOY year one. But I don't think this is like a, what are you talking about question? Like I really like this one. And I think I'm going to have a lot of fun watching Wemby defend this year. so we'll cap it there with the free throw questions. There's a real fun one building out a five player unit from Richard that we're going to get to soon. And that's just going to be something that I feel like we're going to parse out for like 10, 15 minutes. So we will save that one, but it's a really good question for Richard. Don't worry. We have not forgot about you. Steve, do you have free throws?
I'm pulling the Kais. No, do you?
Ah, I do have a few.
I'm here to play defense and space the floor, bud.
That is fine. That is fine. You typically hold it down with the free throws when I'm trying to build stump or I got other stuff going on. So I will carry the mantle for you, friend. Teamwork making the dream work. So since we got some questions over the weekend, would you like to elaborate on your Harden Dwayne Wade take?
No. Okay. I don't ever want to talk about it. I actually kind of want to delete the episode. I don't want to be asked about that, man. Dude, look, man. I've already, no. Combination.
All right. You I'm not doing this with you. Whose summer workout videos are you most confident in? Rudy Gobert's or Scottie Barnes?
Scottie Barnes.
Okay. Tyrese Halliburton or De'Aaron Fox?
Oh, I already used the joke. Well done. That was well played.
Yes. Yikes.
Oh, no. Yes. Right this second, 5 years. What are we thinking here, bud?
Yes.
What do we got? De'Aaron Fox right now.
Okie dokie. Who winds up averaging? We'll shift to the W side very quickly. Who winds up averaging more shots per game this year? Arike or Jewel Lloyd? And before you answer, Arike's at 19.2 right now. Jewel Lloyd at 19.1. Vastly different roster context.
Arike.
Okay, got you. Healthy Aces or the 98 Comets?
I'm not getting packed up. 98 Comets. No, 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 no. I can pull the UNLV card if y'all get mad at me. No, no, no.
Bro said absolutely not.
Man, if I got packed up for AZ Earl, that who knows who's coming for me for disrespecting Cheryl Swoops? Nope.
Fair enough. On the Aces front, who is the Aces' second best player, Steve?
Chelsea Gray.
Okay. Well, now I will follow up. Who's the Aces' third best player, Steve?
Kelsey Plum.
Ah, so you still have Jackie Four?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Got you. wonderful MVP case. Who is the Dream second best player?
That's disgusting work from you. That is nasty. Ryan Howard.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you answered it that way, which leads to my final free throw question. whose likely all W exclusion is going to hurt worst? Alicia Gray or Kalia Copper?
I would probably say Alicia Gray's.
Okay.
With Ka, Ka's having an excellent season, but at least if you want to cope, you can just point to the record. If the Dream end up like the 4 seed and she keeps hooping like this, and it's like, well, actually, then it's like, all right, man.
What more do you want from her?
Exactly. So that's where I go there. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay, fair enough. Well, without, I guess, if we don't have any closing comments, anything before the benediction? No announcements. Just want to make sure we got it all in here. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can follow me on Twitter. Not calling it that. On the Kaius NBA, you can follow Steve at SteveJones20. Join us in the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions or just sharing tweets that we don't want to talk about on the timeline because the timeline is just a mess a lot of times. So, you know, come rock with us. We'll talk it out. Join the online Dunker Spot watch party. If you have not already, we have a blast in there watching plenty of W hoops since that is the current season. We've tapped into some slam ball. Shout out to the Mob, who just do not lose, apparently, even after going down 12-0 in a first quarter and then... Oh, boy. Yeah, they are.
They beat the Grifters, all right?
The Grifters is nasty work. Anyway, watching some W, some slam ball, some wrestling, hooping up with some AEW on Saturday. That was cool. We watched some SmackDown. We doing a little bit of everything.
I'm going to try and turn the Kaius into a collider before football season starts.
You are not the only person that's trying to get me on the train. So it may be successful. They were doing some hooping on Saturday. I give them that. But yeah, we watch a little bit of everything. We've had some F1 in the remotes before. We've watched some darts in our past, lacrosse. It just doesn't, man. We just have a good time. We put up 2K streams, FIFA streams. Come have some fun with us. The link is going to be in your description. It should be hyperlinked. If so, you just click on that, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If not, you just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. We will catch y'all later in the week.
I always knew the Kaius was a Nation of Domination guy.
Oh, brother.